Welcome to the deep dive. Today we're getting into something really fundamental. We're talking about how every single living cell, well, lives, how it decides what comes in and what goes out.
That's right. And it's all governed by these invisible forces and movements. We're going to be doing a deep dive into cellular transport, pulling directly from that recent lecture material by Dr. Ty Hoffman.
Yeah, our mission here is to really cut through some of the concepts that can trip people up. Things like gradients, diffusion, osmosis.
And not just what they are, but why they are so essential. Why a cell's entire fate can hang on these principles.
And one quick note before we jump in, something Dr. Hoffman really stressed. Some of the key slides he used, especially about what happens to cells in different solutions, are technically from later chapters.
Right, but he was clear. He said, you have to understand this stuff now. It's foundational,
yeah,
and it's absolutely testable. So this is the synthesis you need.
Okay, so let's start at the top. Dr. Hoffman laid out three basic ways a cell moves things around.
Yep, active transport, passive transport, and vesicular transport.
And we can probably put vesicular transport on the shelf for now, right? That's the whole packaging stuff and little bubbles thing.
Exactly. It's a different beast. So we're left with the two big ones, active and passive. And this is where Dr. Hoffman made a really important correction about energy.
This is huge, because I think most of us learned that active transport uses energy and passive transport, well, it doesn't.
Yeah. And that's just not right. To get anything to move in the universe, you need energy, period. Nothing moves for free.
So if both use energy, what's the actual difference?
The difference is where that energy comes from. For active transport, you have to apply additional energy. Think ATP. The cell has to spend energy.
Because it's pushing something where it doesn't naturally want to go.
Exactly. Without that extra energy boost, the process is a non-starter. It just will not happen.
Okay, so what about passive transport? It still needs energy, but...
But the energy is already there. It's like potential energy that's already built into the system itself.
And that built-in energy has a name.
It does. We call it the gradient.
The gradient. It's the driver for all of this. And it's such a simple idea when you break it down. It's just a difference between two places.
We see them everywhere. Dr. Hoffman gave some great everyday examples. You have high pressure in your pipes, low pressure outside your faucet.
That's a pressure gradient.
Right. And that difference in pressure is the energy that makes the water shoot out when you turn the handle.
Or plugging something into a wall socket, that's a voltage gradient, an electrical potential energy gradient.
It's the same principle,
yeah.
A difference that drives movement.
Right.
And for cells, the one we care most about is the concentration gradient.
Okay, so we're talking about the amount of stuff dissolved in the water inside and outside the cell.
Exactly. You've got solutes, salts, sugars, and the solvent, which is water. When the concentration of any of that stuff is different on one side of the membrane versus the other, you have a gradient.
And that gradient is the energy.
It is the potential energy.
Yeah.
And this is the core rule of passive transport.
Yeah.
The movement is driven by the gradient itself. If there's no difference, if that gradient is zero,
then passive transport just stops. There's no more net force pushing things around.
Right. And this leads to this really cool kind of counterintuitive idea. The net result is directional movement. But it's all based on completely random motion.
How does that work? How do you get, you know, a predictable outcome from total chaos?
It's explained by Brownian motion. Dr. Hoffman used this fantastic thought experiment, the gym analogy. Imagine people in a gym are your solute particles, just wandering around randomly.
Okay, and you cram almost all of them into a tight huddle right in the center. That's your area of high concentration.
Right. If you're a person, a particle, stuck deep inside that huddle, you can't go anywhere. You take one step and you bump into someone else and you just bounce off in another random direction.
You're trapped.
But if you're on the very edge of that huddle, on the periphery, well, you're much more likely to randomly take a step out into the big empty part of the gym.
Ah, I see. And once you're out, the odds of you randomly turning around and walking right back into that dense crowd are pretty low.
Vanishingly low. So over time, just based on probability, the net effect of all that random bouncing and wandering is that the particles spread out.
From high concentration to low concentration.
Until they're evenly distributed and the gradient is gone. That spreading out is diffusion. That's the potential energy of the gradient being released.
Okay, so that's diffusion in an open space, like a sugar cube in water. But in our case, we're talking about diffusion across a cell membrane, a barrier.
And the wording here is key. Dr. Hoffman was insistent.
Mm-hmm.
We call it a selectively permeable membrane.
Not just semi-permeable, it actively selects what can pass through.
Correct. So for diffusion to happen across that membrane, you need two things, two non-negotiable requirements.
Number one has to be the gradient. You need the tendency, the push.
You have to have the gradient. If the concentration's already equal, nothing's going to happen.
And what's number two?
The membrane has to actually be permeable to that specific particle. You need an open door.
So you can have a massive gradient, a huge desire for a particle to move.
A giant protein, for example. Huge tendency to diffuse out. But if it's too big to fit through any of the channels in the membrane, it's stuck. No permeability, no diffusion. End of story.
And what's really wild is that different particles act on their own. They don't care about each other.
Not at all. They move down their own independent gradients. Think about that diagram with the gold dye on the left and the purple dye on the right.
Right.
The gold particles are going to diffuse to the right down their gradient. The purple particles are going to diffuse to the left down their gradient.
Oh, at the same time. They just pass right by each other.
Completely independent. And that idea is critical because it sets us up for the special case of diffusion we call osmosis.
Okay, so all osmosis is passive transport, but not all passive transport is osmosis.
Perfect. For a process to earn the name osmosis, it has to meet two very strict conditions. First, the thing that's moving has to be the solvent.
Which in biology is always water.
Always water.
And second,
it has to be moving across one of those selectively permeable membranes. That's it. So water moving into a sugar cube in a beaker. That's diffusion, sure. But it's not osmosis. There's no membrane.
Okay. And this is where Dr. Hoffman clarified that very confusing definition that a lot of us memorized.
Oh, yes. The idea that water moves from an area of low solute concentration to an area of high solute concentration.
Which just sounds wrong. It sounds like it's going up a gradient. It's going toward the area with more stuff.
It is a totally backwards way of saying it.
Yeah.
But if you just reframe it and think about the water itself, it clicks into place. An area with low solute concentration is, by definition, an area with
high water concentration. It's more watery.
Exactly. So water, just like everything else, is simply moving down its own gradient from high water concentration to low water concentration.
From where it's more watery to where it's less watery. It always follows the high to low rule.
Always. It's that simple. And that dynamic can reach equilibrium in a couple of interesting ways, like in that YouTube experiment.
Right.
And it could stop if the sugar solution gets diluted enough that the water concentration becomes equal on both sides. Gradient gone.
But there's another way it can stop.
A battle of forces. As the water moves over, the level on the sugary side gets higher and higher. And eventually, the physical weight of that taller column of water gravity pulling down on it can actually become strong enough to push back against the osmotic pressure and stop the flow.
So even if the concentrations aren't equal, the physical force balances out the chemical gradient.
Wow. And what determines that wateriness, that drive for osmosis, is the total solute concentration, not what the suits are.
So you could have salt on one side and sugar on the other, but if the total number of particles is the same,
the wateriness is the same.
Yeah.
And you get zero net osmosis. The membrane doesn't care what the particles are, just how many there are.
Which brings us directly to tonicity. Hypertonic, hypotonic, isotonic.
And this is where Dr. Hoffman put his foot down about language. A really, really important correction.
Yes. He was emphatic. These words, hypertonic, hypotonic, isotonic, are never used to describe the cell.
Ever. They are only, and I mean only, used to describe the cell's environment. The solution it's bathing in. The cell is just reacting to its surroundings.
Okay, so let's start with the ideal for an animal cell, like one of our red blood cells. That would be an isotonic solution.
Iso means equal. The total solute concentration outside is the same as inside. The wateriness is the same.
So water moves in and out at the same rate? The cell is stable, happy.
Perfectly stable. Now, what happens if we put it in a hypotonic solution?
Hypo means lower. So the solution has a lower solute concentration than the cell, which means the outside is more watery.
Exactly. The outside is more watery. So water follows its gradient and rushes into the cell.
And an animal cell only has that flimsy plasma membrane, so it swells up and bursts.
That bursting is called lysis. It splits open. Catastrophic.
And the opposite is a hypertonic environment. Hyper means higher solute concentration outside.
So the environment is less watery than the cell.
So now the inside of the cell is the more watery place. Water rushes out of the cell.
And the cell shrivels up. It collapses. That process is called crenation, also fatal. animal cells are just incredibly sensitive to this balance.
Which is so different from plant cells. They have that big, rigid cell wall outside the membrane, which changes everything.
Completely changes the game. Put a plant cell in a hypertonic solution, it still loses water, the membrane pulls away from the wall.
That's plasmolysis, and that's also fatal for the cell.
Right. In an isotonic solution, a plant cell is just kind of limp. It's fine, but it's flaccid. No structural support.
Which means the ideal state for a plant is actually the one that kills an animal cell.
The hypotonic environment. Water rushes into the plant cell, it swells up, but that rigid cell wall pushes back. It won't let it burst.
And that internal pressure is what makes the cell turgid.
And that turgidity, that pressure, is what gives a plant its structure. It's what lets a little blade of grass stand up against gravity. It's a hydraulic system powered by osmosis.
So when we put it all together, it's really all about gradients. The entire fate of a cell, whether it shrivels, bursts, or stays strong, it all comes down to the difference in concentration between the inside and the outside.
That's the key. That's the fundamental rulebook for how a cell survives.
Right.
You now understand how its destiny is shaped by the wateriness of its environment and the constant, relentless pull of diffusion.
And that leaves us with a final thought to chew on. We just saw how absolutely critical a perfectly isotonic environment is for our animal cells, how fragile they are. So think about your own body, about homeostasis. What unbelievable, complex, and constant work must your body be doing right now to keep the fluid surrounding all your trillions of cells perfectly balanced?
It's not a static thing. It's a nonstop energy-guzzling war being fought every second of your life against the powerful natural forces of diffusion and osmosis just to keep you stable.